on the Queen's Island in Belfast, I had a diploma as a journeyman shipwright. And with my diploma in my pocket, and again with a letter of commendation from some dear brethren in the assembly with which I was in fellowship, I left home with the desire that I had to take the gospel to those people. Now, in going to Angola, anyone that works in that country, at that time, you had to know the Portuguese language. And I felt that that was the first thing to do. I went to Portugal, and I hired a little room there, and I spent a year in Portugal in the study of the Portuguese language. After 6 months, I got through an educational examination that was required at that time, and also was able to get a diploma for teaching Portuguese in elementary schools in Angola. And after I got that diploma, I went across the Tagus and hired a little house in a place called Barreiro on the other side of the River Tagus and started gospel meetings in the Portuguese language. That is to get fluency in the language, and God bless that work. Today, there is an assembly in Barreiro, and all through that area, the gospel has spread. You know there are about 120 assemblies in Portugal? That is not so well known. And again, I would love to occupy time and speak a little bit about that beautiful country and open doors that are there. But while I was in Portugal, I had the very great privilege of meeting a brother that, again, was one of the early pioneers in Africa. His name was Charles Swan. Now, just a word about the early days in Africa itself. Possibly most of you know that the second man to arrive in Central Africa with the gospel after David Livingstone was a young Scotch brother called Fred Stanley Arnott. He was 21 years of age when he went there. He landed in Durban and walked right up into the interior and finally landed at a place that used to be called Garangenze. That is what we used to call the Katanga province of the Belgian Congo. Of course, it wasn't the Belgian Congo then. It was just practically unexplored territory. And Mr. Arnott, he stayed there for 2 years with an old chief called Moshidi. At that time, Moshidi had carved out an empire for himself by blood and murder. He had a stockade surrounding his village, and each stick in the stockade was pointed at the top. And surmounting each pointed stick in the stockade was a human skull. And anyone going through the door into his compound, where he had about 300 wives in that compound, there was a heap of skulls outside his door. And anyone that went in there, they never knew whether they'd come out alive. But Mr. Arnott spent 2 years with Moshidi giving him the gospel without any result. Then he withdrew. And later, there were two brethren came in to relieve Mr. Swan. One was a Canadian, a brother from Hamilton, Ontario. His name was Willie Faulkner. And Mr. Charles Swan of Sunderland in England. These two men had walked for 6 months from the west coast of Africa into the interior, relieved Mr. Arnott, and Mr. Arnott came home on his first furlough. Now, I had the very great privilege of spending a year with Mr. Swan. He was a giant of a man, wore a Van Dyke beard, and he just looked like an ambassador, or he looked like an admiral of the British Navy. Fine, big, upstanding man, had a wonderful grasp of the Portuguese language. And sitting in the meeting there in Santa Catarina, in Lisbon, and listening to Mr. Swan preaching, it was an education for me. But I had a very great privilege of spending a year with him. One would like, again, to go on and describe some of the things that happened during that year. But again, it was an education. Now, after being a year there, I decided that the time had come to go to Africa. I left on a Portuguese ship in an immigrant boat. But before I did, I met a young woman in Portugal, and she was introduced to me by Mr. Robert McLaren. I thank God for Mr. McLaren. I know there's some here that's very intimately connected with him. He was there at the same time as I was, studying Portuguese. And this young woman who came from Hartford, Connecticut, and I came from Belfast, Ireland, I never dreamed in my wildest imagination that that girl ever would deign to be my wife. I thought that she was miles and miles above me. And when I saw her there, I thought she was an absolutely typical person that was fitted for the work of the Lord in Angola. She was going out to do the school work in Chokwiland at Lumakasai with Mr. Leonard Gammon. But in any case, Robert McLaren, he introduced me to her. And by the way, when I came away, Mr. McLaren said, what did you think of the there were two of them. What did you think of the girls? I said, well, there were a couple of real Yanks anyway. All that I saw was goggles and hairnets. They were wearing these great big glasses at the time with plastic rims. And I thought they were just two typical Yanks. And that is what I said. But I never dreamed in my wildest imagination that this girl ever would be my wife. In any case, I started off. Now, the first journey I had in Angola was 540 miles. And I walked every step of that. It took me 5 weeks, 20 miles a day, walking along the native path with a bunch of African carriers, carrying a few belongings. And I took an itinerating trip away up into the north of Angola, and I found a site at that time among the Songo people. It was completely unevangelized. As a matter of fact, that part of the country at the time was practically unexplored. Nothing but the 9-inch path. No civilization of any kind. And I thought that that would make a good center for evangelization among those tribes in which I was interested. I came back to BA, and Mr. Fred Lane was there at the time. I spent 18 months with him learning my first African language. That is Umbundo. But one conclusion I came to when I was up in that area in the north of Angola was that single life was not all that it was cracked up to be. I had the idea that anyone to do pioneer work in a country like Africa should be a single young man without any family responsibility. But when I saw the country and I saw the conditions there, I changed my mind. And then my mind went back to the girl that I had met in Portugal. Now, she was 300 miles away. I was in a place called Hualondo in BA, and to talk to her, to see if she would be interested in the kind of a life that I wanted to live, it meant a walk of 300 miles. And so I started off on that 300-mile walk. It took me 16 days, sleeping beside a fire at night, walking about 20 miles a day, and I finally arrived at Lumakasai in Chokwiland. So we had a little conversation. And I said, would you be interested in going away up into the north in complete isolation, away from help of any kind, civilized help? Well, she said, that's the kind of a life that I would like to live. I said, okay. And you know, we sat and we had a little talk together. And Elizabeth, she agreed to go, and we became engaged to be married. And I walked the 300 miles back again to where I came from. That was 600 miles. And at Christmas time, 1926, I took the 300-mile journey back again with Mr. Fred Alford and his wife and three children. Possibly some of you know the name of Stephen Alford. Stephen was 6 years of age at the time. He was the eldest of three children of Mr. Fred Alford. And Fred Alford and his wife and his three children, we set off again on that 16-day walk back again to Lumakasai. And by the time I got there, I had walked 900 miles to get my wife. And if I was back again at the same period, I would do exactly the same thing over again. I have no regrets at all. I got a wonderful, wonderful partner. Someone that I regarded far, far better than myself. Had far more training than I had. And I thank God for a good partner. We were married by Portuguese law at Luzo. Now, we know that Dr. David was there 2 years ago in Luzo, and we stood up before the Portuguese administrator and we repeated our marriage vows in the Portuguese language on the 23rd of June, 1927, and we had our golden wedding 2 years ago. So we're awfully thankful. But after the wedding ceremony, we started off on a honeymoon walk for 13 days, 200 odd miles up to this area that I had previously chosen. A pair of innocents in her early 20s, and we started off into this country, and the first bed we had there, we pitched a little tent in the middle of the woods when we arrived at the place that I had decided that we would spend some time among that tribe, and we built a little tent, and our first bed there was four forked sticks set on the ground, logs placed on top, the whole thing laced together with bamboo and bark rope and two or three armfuls of grass, and we slept in that place for 6 months, while I knocked the trees down, made a clearing in the forest, and built a little three-roomed house. And after that, we spent 16 years committing that language to writing and doing the first pioneer work among the Songhe tribe. Now, we had many, many, many experiences at that time. I don't want to give anybody the impression that we were suffering any hardship. We were not. We thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, every day we had the great privilege of settling among people that had never heard the name of Jesus. And I tell you, I don't know of any greater joy than to go in among people who have never heard the name of Christ, never heard the gospel, and to have the privilege of settling among them, learning their language, and then taking the gospel to them. Now, one of the first things we had to do, we had already spent time in learning three languages, Portuguese in Portugal, Umbundo in BA, and then Chokwe in the Chokwe area. And when we went up among these people, we had to learn a language that never had been committed to writing. It would take too long to go into detail about language work. Possibly someone might say, just what do these African languages sound like? I'm going to repeat John 3:16 in Chokwe. It'll give you an idea of how these African languages sound. Momo, say chocho, zambi wa zangiri apahashi. Temo nenu wa wika wa mwechele. Temo eswe mafo yele kuli iye kechika toka. Shina akapwini mwana wa miyaka yeswe. For God so loved the world, that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. We started into language work, and then the Portuguese at that time demanded that we do educational work and also give medical assistance to the people and do vocational work. The Portuguese, of course, their national religion was Roman Catholicism. It was subsidized by the Portuguese government, but evangelical missionaries were hampered in every way. I'm not going to go into detail about that. No subsidy of any kind, and yet they demanded that we do educational work in Portuguese, also give medical assistance to the people, teach them trade, and if we fulfilled the law along these three lines as a concession, they allowed us to do our spiritual work. You know, to start a school and teach ignorant, illiterate Africans a Portuguese language, and all we could do was explain in the first classes, explain in the African vernacular what the words meant. It was a difficult thing. But we thank God that over the years, schoolwork, educational work developed. My wife had had training along medical lines before we went to Africa at all. I did not. I had no training whatever along that line. But I did the knocking down of the trees, sawing up lumber by hand labor with a cross-cut saw, with an African on the other end of the saw that had never had a saw in his hand before. And before we had a table or a chair or a door frame or an article of furniture of any kind, it meant knocking down the trees and sawing them up and then making our furniture and building our homes and so on. And then we were up against native religion. Every man in the country, over 20 years of age, practically all were polygamous. Some had three or four wives. An old chief at the back of where we were living, he had 26 wives. And after the Lord begins to work and souls begin to get saved, and again, we were young people, very, very ignorant about many things, and especially principles from the Word of God connected with marriage, divorce, and remarriage, and so on. Very, very immature at the time. And what to do with people in an environment on a background of that time, it was most difficult. Now, again, my time is more than gone, and I'm not going to continue at any length. But all I want to say is this, that over the years, in spite of all the problems and difficulties that we were up against, souls began to get saved, assemblies were formed. We spent 16 years in that area. Our three children were born there. And by the way, those three children were among the first that were at Sakeji School. It was over 1,000 miles away from where we lived. And one of our great problems, one of our great heartaches in life, was the fact that when our children were 7 years of age, we had to send them away to school. And we have never had them living with us permanently again. They did come home in the dry season for a little while, but as far as Christmas was concerned, the time was too short. They couldn't get home. And our children, they had that experience of spending Christmas there in the middle of the bush with other people and not able to come home. That was heartbreaking. And it was one of the problems, the early missionaries, that they had to go through. The education and the upbringing of their children. I'm awfully thankful that our three children, they're grown today, they're married, they have families of their own, and in spite of the fact that we had to part with them, there's absolutely no antagonism between our three children and ourselves. Every time we see them, they come to throw their arms around our neck, and they kiss us, and they say, we know perfectly well that you are doing it for the best. And we're thankful that there's absolutely nothing but love and affection between our children and ourselves. And God has saved all three of them. We have 12 grandchildren at the present time. And our second son, Tom, is a full-term missionary today in Bulawayo in Rhodesia. He has 6 children. And by the way, yesterday, his oldest son, Terry, who's in the Rhodesian army, conscripted there, he was married yesterday. And we're awfully thankful that God has preserved both our children and our grandchildren and have a good testimony for the Lord. So we're awfully grateful about that. I wish I could go into more detail about those early days of pioneering and the experiences that we had, assembly building, teaching the Word of God. All I want to say is that over the years, those early brethren, and by the way, let me pay a tribute to dear, dear fellow workers. We had the cream of the crop in Angola. We think of the early pioneers. Many of them are buried there after 50 years of work. I want to pay a tribute to them. I can't mention all their names. Fred Lane, Edward Sanders from Liverpool, England, and Ed Bodley from London, Ontario, and at Boma, Dr. Leslie Beer, a very, very dear friend. Leslie Beer brought 2 of her children into the world. We're awfully thankful to that dear servant of God who labored for 35 years at Boma in Chokoland, an outstanding servant of God for whom we have the highest respect. Robert McLaren, whose name I have already mentioned, Leonard Gammon, Fred Alford, Malcolm McJanet, Miss Susan McCrae, who came from this part of Canada, I'm not sure exactly just which part, but in any case, an outstanding servant of the Lord. These were men and women for whom we have the greatest respect, all of them except Robert McLaren, have gone. Robert, as you probably know, is completely helpless at the present time. Lying there, outside London, Ontario, he has had a number of massive strokes. He can't speak, he can't talk, he can't get up. And his dear wife has had to take care of him for quite a number of years. Please pray for Robert, coming towards the end of his life. And then the younger men that have come out since. Again, we have the cream of the crop. David Long, he came out again when he was 21 years of age. And the first 5 years of his service in the country, he spent in our home. David is an outstanding, distinguished servant of the Lord. He has translated the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelation in the Chokwe language, and that is not an amateur job. He has done a splendid piece of work in translating the whole Bible, and mind you, it is a phenomenal task. And dear Albert Harden, again a warm, warm friend of a lifetime. He too has translated the whole Bible into the Lavalley language and at the present time is translating a concordance for the help of the Christians in the Lavalley area. These are some of the servants of God in Angola. We have nothing but the highest respect for all of them. And then another one who spent his first years in Angola in our home was Don Cole. You probably know Don. He too is an outstanding servant of God. God has richly blessed him too with gifts. And we thank God for these men that we have known and loved over the years. In closing, please pray for Angola. We, up until the critical time when the government was taken over by a communist government, we had 400 assemblies in Angola and approximately 40,000 baptized believers in assembly fellowship. But at the present time, they're under a severe period of persecution. I was in Luanda when the changeover of government took place. We have tried to avoid politics or expressing any opinions of what has happened, but a communist government has taken over. And Dr. Neto, who is the Prime Minister today of Angola, has said that he plans that within 20 years there will not be a single evangelical believer in Angola. Now, he has sworn that. But the other day I heard that he has leukemia. And he may not be around very long. And I think that God could take him. And God can overrule. But at the present time, those that are there doing the work are under very, very great pressure. George Wiseman and his wife Ina, and then Marjorie Beckwith and Doris Pittman from Sherbrooke, here in Quebec, they are working in Chokwiland at Beulah. And then at the coast, Charlie Shorten and his wife Betty have just landed there. We had a letter from them last week, and they are having the greatest difficulty in getting food. We know that the communist government there will try to hamper them in every possible way. So please do pray for the work in Angola, that after all these years, that work has been done, assembly's been planted, gift has been raised up, but please pray that the work may not be smashed by this very antagonistic government that has taken over. I don't want to continue any longer or maybe weary you by some of the statistics and the details connected with it. I want to say to you young people who are here tonight, and I just want to leave a challenge with you. As far as I'm concerned, if I was back at 21 years of age, I would do exactly the same thing. I'm coming towards the end of my life. I'm 77 years old now. And I've been in full-time service for the Lord for 56 years. And I know that a very short time remains. But you, if the Lord tarries, you have your life before you. Don't waste your life. It's the most tangible thing that God has given to you. And whatever you do, get down upon your knees and ask God what he would have you do. The world is waiting. The world is a needy place today. And I don't say, come to Central Africa. If the Lord led you to go there, God bless you. But everywhere in the world today, there are open doors. And there's a tremendous need. And don't waste your life by going into something that at the end of your life, you'll bitterly regret that you haven't spent your life for God. The greatest vocation, I believe, in life today is for a young person to get down upon their knees and commit themselves to God for whatever he would have for them. And at the end of your life, when it comes to that moment, when the Lord will take you home, absolutely no regrets. And just to take your life and your body, soul and spirit, and commit it to the Lord for his service, and I think the Lord will bless you. As I already mentioned at the beginning, I asked the Lord for 2 years, and instead of that he's given me 56 years. Isn't the Lord good? He certainly is. We thank God. He's been far, far better to us than ever we deserve. And we have the joy, again and again, of preaching the gospel to people who have never heard it. And that is the greatest privilege under heaven today. May God bless each one here tonight, and especially our dear young people. And again, I want to appeal to you. Don't waste your life. Give it to God. and ask him to guide you, and if you do, God will bless you. And God bless each one here tonight for his name's sake.
Perhaps you could just sing very softly two times through that piece, turn your eyes upon.